Hello, podcast listeners. This is Dr. Fred Rivard with the Firearm Injury and Policy Research Program at the University of Washington. Today, we have one of our terrific postdoctoral fellows with us, Dr. Julie Kafka. Dr. Kafka is a public health researcher, and she is doing some terrific work. Today, she's going to be talking with us about the issue of firearm rights restoration. Hello, Julie. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Dr. Rivard. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. So, first of all, can you tell us what is firearm rights restoration? Who does it apply to?
Sure. So, when people in the United States are convicted of a felony or a domestic violence misdemeanor, they lose their right to own or possess a firearm. So they can't pass a background check, they can't legally purchase a gun, and if they were to be found in possession of a firearm, they could be arrested for that. Prohibited individuals can seek to have their firearm rights reinstated under certain circumstances. In some situations, this can actually happen automatically. In other instances, states require that the prohibited person submit a formal petition to the court system asking to have their gun rights back, and then a judge decides whether that person is allowed to again purchase or possess guns. In other situations, particularly if the prohibiting crime was severe, there may be no option at all to restore firearm rights.
What's the situation here in Washington State?
In Washington, the situation has actually been changing. There's been debate over different kinds of laws and policies and what would be most appropriate. There is in Washington a waiting period. So in some states, waiting period is kind of just a colloquial term to describe the fact that people might have to wait 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years before they can become eligible to petition for restoration of firearm rights. And so there's been discussion in Washington about what is that right waiting period, who should become eligible, and when, and then do judges have discretion about whether and how they decide on firearm rights restoration petition requests. So these processes vary pretty dramatically from state to state, and the legal landscape is always shifting.
Well, do we know how often people actually petition for firearm rights restoration, and how often it actually is granted once petitioned?
This is such an important question. With some of my colleagues in the Firearm Injury and Policy Research Program, we recently did a deep dive in the literature and found no peer-reviewed studies that gave any empirical estimates about how often people who are prohibited petition to have their firearm rights restored, or how often those requests are granted. We did find a little bit of literature about prohibitions and restoration processes for people who had prohibitions stemming from an underlying mental health problem or who had been involuntarily committed. But really, we found nothing on firearm rights restoration actions or outcomes for people who have prohibiting criminal convictions. And so this group is likely much, much larger than the folks who have mental health prohibitions. So this really represents a pretty substantial gap in the research. We did find some interesting reports in the gray literature, meaning reports that have not been peer reviewed. One report actually from the US government tried to examine records on firearm rights restoration actions in multiple states. And they simply found that this information wasn't consistently documented over time and that many states had huge gaps in their data on this. So the best data that we have right now probably comes from actually a New York Times article, which was published in 2011. The journalist did some digging in records from Washington State and found that between 1995 and 2010, more than 3,300 people with prohibiting convictions had regained their gun rights. And they estimated that during this time period, at least 400 of those people had been subsequently rearrested or convicted of new crimes. So that's really the best data that we have right now, but we don't know whether those data necessarily were comprehensive. We don't have details about their sampling or data abstraction strategies. we don't know who was included, who was excluded, and we don't know much about the nature of those subsequent crimes in terms of whether they were violent or nonviolent. And so the reason I bring up this last point is because I think whenever we're dealing with criminal legal data, it's important to think through what biases are baked into that data, what crimes get reported, who is then arrested and prosecuted, and then how we can obviously take this into consideration when we're doing our research. There's a historical legacy of racism in the criminal justice system, which has disproportionately harmed people from minoritized communities. So thinking about the types of crimes we're talking about and who's been impacted and how our society reacts is really important in this kind of research.
I can imagine that not everyone is happy with the idea of a person who's been convicted of a crime getting their guns back. What are some of those arguments that you know about?
Yeah, absolutely. Some studies have found that the federal prohibition on people with criminal convictions, so felony convictions and domestic violence misdemeanor convictions, that prohibition has effectively prevented those people from engaging in violent crimes. And we have some good research coming out of California that shows that these prohibitions are effective. Opponents also argue that, the number one predictor for violent behavior is past violence. So if we know, for example, that a person has been convicted of assault in the second degree, then this person may pose an enduring threat to the safety and well-being of others. So I think the other really important consideration here is that, who benefits from firearm rights restoration and who might be harmed most. And victim survivors of violence could be pretty fearful or distressed at the idea of someone who has abused them or harmed them regaining access to a gun. And in the domestic violence context in particular, we know that guns are often used to explicitly threaten and intimidate others. And sometimes just the fact that an abusive individual has access to a gun can make them generally more intimidating and their possibly abusive behaviors all the more frightening. So I think taking a public health and safety approach to this, to the idea of firearm rights restoration is absolutely one perspective that argues that, we need to be thinking clearly and carefully about who can have their firearm rights restored and we need to consider possible harms in that process.
So those are pretty cogent arguments against firearm rights restoration. What are the arguments for allowing it?
Sure. So proponents of firearm rights restoration tend to argue that prohibited individuals have served their time, they may no longer pose a threat of harm to others, and they probably no longer deserve to be punished by the government. And so proponents really argue that it should be easy, it shouldn't be burdensome, and there should be an accessible way to have people with criminal convictions become normal citizens again, restore their firearm rights. So there is an interesting argument, I think, on both sides that are both very coherent and form a kind of push-pull in the debate around firearm rights restoration policy and practice.
So what do you as a researcher see as the research needs that would help to advance our knowledge and help to drive public policy in this area?
Absolutely. So I think there's a clear need for empirical research on this topic to help inform policy and practice so that we can both mitigate the risk that a prohibited individual will later engage in firearm-related violence or harms if their gun rights were restored, while at the same time equitably reinstating firearm rights to individuals who clearly no longer pose a threat of harm to others. So the question is, how do we balance that equation? I mean, research, we need to know first who is asking for firearm rights restoration, who is having their firearm rights restored, and really what is happening after those gun rights are reinstated. And once we can answer some of those more basic questions, then I think we can help understand more what can be done in the public policy sphere, including informing decisions on who should become eligible for restoration and when, what kinds of risk indicators should disqualify someone for getting their firearm rights back. thinking through how we can ensure that firearm rights restoration processes are not unduly burdensome for prohibited individuals without making these processes too flimsy or unsubstantial to allow possibly violent individuals to regain access to a gun. And then I think importantly, really thinking critically how we can keep victim survivors informed about these processes, including victim survivors from initial prohibiting crimes.
Well, that's terrific. Any other topics you want to bring up or any other thoughts you have before we end?
Sure. I mean, I think it's interesting to consider why this research isn't already happening. Why is there such a big gap in our understanding about what happens when prohibited people with prior criminal convictions get their firearm rights back? I think one important finding that we had when we consulted the research literature was that the court record data that are available at the state level are often inconsistent, incomplete, or they're just not recorded in a manner that's easily accessible to researchers. So thinking about partnerships with state courts to mine existing data systems, partnering with policymakers to improve data infrastructure, I think all of these are really critical to enable more rigorous and any research at all, really, on firearm rights restoration. And I think in addition to using court record data, there are also creative approaches that we can take, like interviewing people who are petitioning for restoration of their firearm rights, talking with victim survivors of violence to hear their opinions on the subject, and other qualitative approaches as well. I think the other need that might bear mentioning is more thorough and better synthesis of state laws to really understand the full variability in firearm rights restoration policies and processes. Because these are changing often, and there's just very large differences in how states are approaching this issue.
Well, thanks very much. This has been a terrific interview. I really appreciate it. I hope our listeners also have enjoyed listening to this and learning about this important policy. Thanks very much.